ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಸೊ ವಿ ಆರ್ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಾಮ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ 9th ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 20th ವರ್ಸ್ ನಂಬರ್ 27th. ರೈಟ್, ತ್ರಯಸ್ತ್ರಿಂಶತ್ಶತಂ ಹ್ಯಶ್ವಾನ್ ಬದ್ಧ್ವಾ ವಿಸ್ಮಾಪಯನ್ ನೃಪಾನ್ ದೌಷ್ಮಂತಿರ್ ಅತ್ಯಗಾನ್ ಮಾಯಾಂ ದೇವಾನಾಂ ಗುರುಂ ಆಯಯೌ. Translation: Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushmanta, bound 3,300 horses for those sacrifices, and thus he astonished all other kings. He surpassed even the opulences of the demigods, for he achieved the supreme spiritual master Hari. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who achieves the lotus feet of the supreme personality of Godhead certainly surpasses all material wealth, even that of the demigods in the heavenly planets. Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate naadhikam tatah. The achievement of the lotus feet of Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most exalted achievement in life. So I humbly beg blessings from all the wonderful Vaishnavas. One of the most powerful assembly in the world, probably. Wearing very shy to sit here. I didn't get much time to prepare for the Bhagavatam, and I was feeling that I will use some time in the morning today. But all that got consumed in Gopalji's painting. So all that went away. So nothing is left now. So whatever little bit I have to share, you know, please accept it. Those Aparada Shodhan mantras which are chanted inside, I think I should chant in front of all of you also. Whatever without bhakti and whatever without devotion being offered, please accept it. So actually, it's very interesting that we have three personalities of the name Bharat in the scriptures, in the Vedic literatures. One is the brother of Lord Ramchandra. One is the famous Bharat of 5th canto, the son of Rishabhdev, who became Jad Bharat. And one is this son of Dushyant and Shakuntala. Bhagavatam mentions the name as Dushmanta. In Mahabharat, the name is mentioned as Dushyanta, the same personality. So this son, Bharat Maharaj. And Srila Prabhupada says that both Bharat, the Bharat from the 5th canto, the Bharat Maharaj, and this Bharat, because of both of them, this Indian subcontinent is known as Bharat. So the previous verse actually, it describes the glorious activities of this wonderful king. It mentions that how right from the mouth of Ganga, right up to its end, and right from Prayag back up to the mouth of Jamuna, in all the holy places he performed sacrifices. And it's mentioned that 78 sacrifices on the bank of Jamuna, or maybe Ganga, and 55 sacrifices on the bank of Ganga, like that. It's very beautiful, so amazing. And total number of horses which were used in that sacrifice is mentioned here is 3,300. So the two wonderful things which this verse mentions, we should initially focus on that. So the two immediate benefits of performing the sacrifices. So if you can if you just see the wonderful arrangement of the Lord, just like in Shastras also, or in other religions, we know the wonderful dialogue between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chand Kazi. And Chand Kazi says that, you know, we have a Pravrutti Marga and Nivrutti Marga also. In our scriptures also, these two paths are there. The paths of sense gratification and the path of vairagya, the path of renunciation. However, this process of sacrifice is so wonderful that in one process only, you get both. So here we see, just by performing the sacrifices, he is already exceeding the opulences of the demigods, right? And on top of that, he's also attaining the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you study Bhagavad Gita, I don't know whether this was discussed in the previous sessions of on this series, but if you study Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, Lord Krishna systematically explains that how simply by performing sacrifices you can get prosperity. He mentions that right at the beginning of the creation, Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he created the generations of demigods and human beings, he gave the sacrifices. He gave sacrifices to the human beings. And he said, okay, may all these sacrifices make you completely prosperous and happy. That's the verse. What is the verse? Beginning from? Sahayadnya praja srushtva purovacha prajapati. Anena prasavishyadvam eshavas twishta kamaduk. Let all your desires be fulfilled by this process, Lord Krishna. So the Vedic authority, the Vedic scriptures do not deny the need of prosperity. It's required. Because every person, ultimately a conditioned soul, has come to this material world to enjoy. And you cannot enjoy without prosperity. So Lord Krishna so wonderfully is giving us a process by which you can have prosperity. And then what happens after that? Then he says that when you perform the sacrifices, the demigods who are in charge of so many different things in this world, you know, just like for a sunlight, there is a demigod. For a wind, there is a demigod. Now, when you speak this to the modern world, you know, they don't accept it. They say, how? You mean there is a demigod who is controlling the motion of the wind? We don't accept it. So I was recently reading one article, wonderful article. I think it was by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, our Brahmachari. And he mentions that, he said, just like a small child or illiterate man, forget about a small child, illiterate man, he sees an aeroplane flying in the sky. And he says, oh, wow. How this wonderful piece of metal, so huge in size. Actually, I don't know how many of you have seen aeroplane from close. Like, suppose if you are driving on the highway, especially during that Villeparle and Santa Cruz area, and sometimes you see a flight landing, and it's so huge actually. I mean, so many trucks actually will fit into that. And yet it's flying in the sky. So it's miraculous. How can this fly in the sky? So for a literate person, he sees a flight from the close by, he'll say, oh my God, this is a miracle. How can this flight? But an educated man who understands a little bit of engineering and knows that, you know, there are people who have trained to build engines like that, there are people who are trained to drive those engines, there are people who are trained systematically, and they are controlling it. So he understands, okay, fine, this is all being controlled. Similarly, a person who is illiterate in the scriptures, he sees the wind blowing, he sees the lights coming, you know, he will try to justify some, okay, there is some low pressure area and high pressure area, and that's why the wind is moving, you know. So just like, suppose I am sitting here and suddenly this fan switches off, stops working, and then, you know, I feel hot, so I get up and I go to the place where there is another fan, right? So is it the difference in the air pressure because of which I have moved? That is the cause, because there was a less cooling effect here and more better cooling there. That's why I got up and went there. But ultimately, who is me who got that air pressure difference or that heat difference was not sufficient for me to get up and go there. Or even if there are some laws who accept that there are low pressure and high pressure and then there are transfer of, then who made that law? As soon as there is a law, there has to be a lawmaker. This is the basic principle Prabhupada drives in so many books that he, and so many purports. There has to be a lawmaker. So the person is always there. So there are so many demigods who are in charge of so many different departments. And when sacrifices are performed, then they are happy. And when they are happy, they are satisfied by the sacrifice. Later on, Lord Krishna explains. He says, what is that? Devan bhavayata yena te deva bhavayantuvah. So once you perform the sacrifice, the demigods who are happy with the sacrifice, you know, they bestow the good and prosperity unto you also. And like that, with the mutual cooperation between the demigods and the human beings, the prosperity reigns all over the planet. And then Krishna goes further. He says, so the prosperity is being given by demigods, but then if you don't give anything in the back, then you are a thief. And then he also says the benefits of performing sacrifices. He says the first benefit, then that Yajna Shishta Shina Santo verse, the beautiful verse comes. So Krishna explains that the first benefit is this food which is being offered in the sacrifice, that food acts as a vaccine, Prabhupada explains in the purport. The fact that you're in the material world, the forces of this material world, they, you know, just affect us and they impel us from within to perform horrible activities. But we can protect ourselves from this epidemic of this force of material nature just by eating food which is offered in sacrifice, acts as a vaccine. And then he also explains that because of sacrifices, it rains. And then because of rains, then again the civilization happens. And then ultimately Krishna concludes by saying that one who does not follow this cycle of prosperity, you know, he's simply wasting his time. So the first benefit of performing sacrifice is already mentioned here in all these verses. The second benefit which is mentioned here is attaining the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada in this purport, he wonderfully mentioned this verse, Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate nadhikam tataha. So when I read this verse, actually I felt that, okay, let me refer to this verse in Bhagavad Gita. So I read the whole purport. And you can actually appreciate the clarity of understanding that Srila Prabhupada has. What clarity and what wonderful understandings, Prabhupada immediately quotes this verse. And if you open that purport, this Yam labdhva cha param labham comes in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Talks about Dhyana Yoga. And this is a description of a person who has already attained Samadhi. You know the Ashtanga Yoga process, it has various steps. And the final step is Samadhi. So one who has attained Samadhi, what is the consciousness, what is the status of that person? You know, Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate nadhikam tata. He considers that is the best thing. There cannot be anything better than this. I don't need to achieve anything else in my life. You know, that is the status of Samadhi. And if you read the purport, then Srila Prabhupada writes there wonderfully. He says, most of the people who follow the process of Ashtanga Yoga, they feel, what is the goal of Samadhi? He says, the goal of Samadhi, they feel, is that the super soul actually understands that I am none other than super soul. The soul and the super soul, they come together. But Srila Prabhupada says, but that's not the real thing. That's not the real teaching of Ashtanga Yoga process. And then he quotes a very powerful sutra of Patanjali. And he says, he quotes that sutra. I think it is Purushartha Shunyanam Gunanam Prati Prasavaha Kaivalyam Swarupa Pratishthava Chiti Shaktiriti. He quotes that sutra. He said, just refer to this sutra. What is mentioned here? You are saying the goal of Ashtanga Yoga process is to attain moksha, is to attain liberation. But the very first thing that Patanjali Muni is explaining is Purushartha Shunyanam. The moksha is considered in the category of Purushartha only. He says, the goal of, even in the beginning stages of your Ashtanga Yoga, Purushartha Shunyanam, that means all your Purushartha are becoming zero. They are becoming completely void. And Gunanam Prati Prasavaha, that means you are already transcending the modes of material nature. Just like some people, they follow the Ashtanga Yoga process. And after following Ashtanga Yoga process, they attain Siddhis. But even these Siddhis are within the three modes of material nature. And people actually accept them as God, unfortunately. But, you know, what to become God, they are not even beyond the purview of three modes of material nature. And then he mentions, so first only, the beginning only, in the Ashtanga Yoga process, this process is already happening. Purushartha Shunyanam Gunanam Pratipasava. And then what? Then he says, Kaivalyam Swarupa Pratishtha. He says, this process of Kaivalyam, which the monist and the Mayavadis consider as liberation, Patanjali Muni does not call it as liberation. He says, what is this Kaivalyam? He says, Kaivalyam is actually Swarupa Pratishtha. That means what? That means your establishment of your original transcendental nature. So Kaivalyam has nothing to do with liberation. Kaivalyam actually means your Swarupa Pratishtha. And then Srila Prabhupada mentions that actually, how does this Swarupa Pratishtha happens? How does a person understands what is my transcendental nature? So then he mentions that va chiti shakti riti. This Swarupa Pratishtha is non different than chiti shakti, which is the internal potency of the heart. The internal potency of the Lord is the chiti shakti that helps us understand our constitutional nature. And then Srila Prabhupada says, this same process, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls it as Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So see the wonderful connection that Prabhupada makes. So this Cheto Darpana Marjanam, when when you clean the mirror of the heart by the process of chanting Hare Krishna, once the heart mirror of the mind is completely cleared, you transcend the modes of material nature, you transcend the effects of material nature, and what happens? You actually understand your original constitutional position, which is actually the same goal as performing this Ashtanga Yoga process. The same goal is achieved by this process of chanting Hare Krishna. And what is this process of chanting Hare Krishna? In the previous verse, we understand that is nothing but like performing sacrifices. So simply by performing the sacrifices, one is not only getting the benefit of having prosperity, right? But he's also getting the benefit of attaining the lotus feet of Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this process is actually given by this wonderful king here, Bharat Maharaj. So I was just thinking that this process of sacrifice and process of attaining the sacrifice, process of attaining the prosperity through the sacrifice, and at the same time attaining the supreme goal of life, how does it manifest in the social order of life? You know, because if I just explain to you these things, they appear to be very theoretical. They appear to be things of very bygone days. So to manifest those things in today's social structure. So I was just thinking that because this is the king, Bharat, and from him the country has been named as Bharat. So I was just thinking that how this, our Indian tricolor flag, how this tricolor flag, how wonderfully demonstrates and explains that how socially this act of sacrifice can come about. So in the tricolor flag of India, the first color is the saffron color. Just see. If you want to do something good for the country, and if you want to do something good for the nation, and even good for the humanity, the first thing that you have to follow is detachment from sex life, or restricted sex life. You see, even in the social order, you will see people, there are certain social political parties also. And if you want to take part in that, then you have to become a brahmachari first. You're not allowed to get married. So a person who is attached to enjoying sense gratification, actually, he cannot do any betterment for humanity. It is not possible. Because the whole act of that sense gratification makes you so selfish that it is not possible to do any good things for humanity. Just like in the history also, India also, there is a story of this one queen, a Rajput queen. And this Rajput king, he was sitting with his Rajput queen and he actually wanted to enjoy her. And at the same time, there was a whole big army of enemy which attacked this country. And the queen was saying, "Now you go. I mean, this is not a time to enjoy. You have to go and fight." But he was just so enamored and just so attracted, he didn't want to go. So the queen actually, she just went inside and she actually cut her own head. And when the king saw the dead body of the queen, he realized, oh my God, you know, what big blunder I was doing, being attached to these forces of sense gratification. Then he went and he fought the battle. Even we see in the case of the example of Uttam Kumar, you know, in the Mahabharata which appears, who was always being surrounded by women and always enjoying in that company. So he didn't have the valor when he stood in front of Bhishma, Karna and Drona and all that, he was shaking. He didn't have the valor to fight. In our Marathi also, when I was school, there was a chapter, and there was a poem actually. And the title of the poem was, it was on this Uttam Kumar. It was Balisha Bahu Bayakata Badbadla. That was it's very funny actually. That means he was simply Balish, that this is only qualification that he would just talk amongst women. He didn't have any activity. Even Parshuram Bhagwan, when he was killing all the Kshatriyas, he said that, oh, that Kshatriya I will not kill who is surrounded by women. Because there is no question of valor there. You know? Because if you are constantly surrounded by the objects of sense gratification, you know, you cannot do anything better for the country. It is not possible. There have been political leaders in this very own country who have had similar attachments, and you can see the history that they didn't do much for the country actually. There's no need to mention names because everyone knows about it. But they couldn't really do much for the country. They couldn't, you know, when the war was stuck, you know, they didn't have the strong position to go and fight. That valor, you know, and that power only comes to a person who has restricted sense enjoyment. Now, the only person who can do betterment for the entire humanity and be simultaneously surrounded by women is Lord Krishna. Therefore, we hear the verse, what is that? Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate. In the same verse, the two words are coming. He is Karuna Sindhu also, at the same time, he is Gopika Kanta also. So, at the same time, he can be surrounded by so many women, and they are the most beautiful women of the world, and at the same time, he can be doing the greatest benefit for the entire humanity. And he's a Karuna Sindhu. You know, this is actually against the laws of material nature. This cannot exist in a normal person. The only person where this combination can exist is Lord Krishna. And forget about just Lord Krishna, even the most esoteric pastime of Lord Krishna's appearance on this world is Ras Lila, you know. And in the peak of that emotion of Ras Lila, the song is sung by gopis. It is called Gopi Geet. And what is the first line of that song? Tava krathamrutam tapta jivanam kavibhiriditam kalmashapaham. They are also talking about how to relieve the pain of suffering of humanity. Just imagine. Can this ever happen that the two lover and beloved, they are sitting in a park in a very amorous condition, and what they are thinking about, how to relieve the suffering of humanity? It's not possible. But this can happen in Lord Krishna's pastime. Otherwise, for normal thing, it is not possible. Therefore, for having dedication and to do something very nice in life, you know, the first requirement is that you have to have restricted sense gratification. That is the saffron color. That represents the saffron color, right? And then, when you have such wonderful training given to, of brahmacharya training that is offered to such people, then from such a wonderful training sprouts a very stable grahastha ashram, which is the wonderful white color that comes in our flag. That stable grahastha ashram comes, you know, white color actually indicates peace, it indicates tranquility of mind also. Right, when you see white color, that is tranquility of the mind, you know. So when a person, he has had such wonderful training of sense control, then in his married life, he can be tranquil in the mind. Otherwise, what happens? Then you know, every month you want to buy a new mobile phone. You see a new car, you want to buy that new car. And you see a new dress of shirt somewhere, then you immediately want to buy the shirt. And you know, there is just so many attachments in grahastha life, which just keeps on coming forward. Like yesterday only, you know, I was thinking, looking at my mobile phone, and I said, you know, my mobile phone already has become now 7 months old. I need to buy a new one. So I already went to the website, started looking for the model. Actually, the amount of time that a normal Gruhamedhi person spends in, you know, looking for models of cars and models of mobile phones, if even that much time is developed in reading Shastras, you can actually go back to Godhead. So much of time is wasted in that. That's a fact. So I'm wearing this white color here, but you know, that tranquility of mind is not there. And just a few days before, I remember there are people from our counseling group who had expressed desire that, you know, there are other devotees who want to go for yatra and they don't have enough funds, you know. So at that time I was thinking, no, I will not give my money because ultimately I need my money. So I don't have money, I am also a poor person. And here I am planning to waste the money in buying mobile phones and so many other things. So that's how it happens. When there is no tranquility of mind, you cannot make proper decisions in life. Right? So this stable grahastha ashram is required. And when such people of tranquil and peaceful mind are there, so this white belt is below the saffron belt. So what happens is that becomes a foundation and support for the entire brahmacharya ashram. So a peaceful grahastha and a tranquil grahastha that supports the brahmacharya ashram. And that saffron belt protects the white belt from outside also. So the saffron is protecting the white, and white is supporting that saffron. Such a wonderful combination. And when there is such wonderful combination of white and saffron, then from that sprouts this prosperity. That is the green belt that comes. So that's what is given here. So if you have people who are dedicated to perform sacrifices, and then there are people who are sense-controlled and peaceful and tranquil in their mind, then the generation that comes from such background, that leads to prosperity. And then there is genuine prosperity. And you see, even in the history of the world, even outside India also, you see the countries who are actually flourishing and were in the peak of their economic success, at some point of time, they have had serious, serious commitments and dedication and sacrifice. That has to exist. So this is the way we have the saffron, white and green. And then the most important of all is that wheel that comes in the middle. So I was hearing to this lecture of Govind Prabhu, and he mentioned, what is the wheel? You know, the Sudarshan Chakra. He said, Krishna, he has the Sudarshan Chakra in the hand. The word Sudarshan has two meanings. He said, the first Sudarshan, the scriptures are also known as Darshan. If you see the Vedic literature, the scriptures are also called as Darshan. It is Darshan philosophy. So, initially, what the chance which is given to a human being is that you follow this Darshan. This is a Sudarshan. It's a good Darshan. But then if you don't follow this Sudarshan, then you need Shastra. Then that same vehicle becomes a chakra. So then there is Shastra required. So first the preference is given, okay, you read this book, you become educated, this is Sudarshan. So what happens is, when you are in the green belt and there is tremendous prosperity, the obvious outcome of the prosperity is that you become enamored by it. You become completely infatuated by it, right? So when you're in that infatuated state of prosperity, you need Sudarshan. You need that chakra to tell you, hey, don't get enamored by this. In one place, I was hearing this lecture, reading this lecture of Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave this lecture in Birla House in New Delhi. And so it's a very historical place, actually. You know, that place in New Delhi, that's the same place where Mahatma Gandhi used to come and have his meetings. And when Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated, he was actually assassinated in the same ground. That's the Birla ground there. And Srila Prabhupada is giving a lecture in that place. Just imagine, it's a very historic place. And Prabhupada says, the cause of India's downfall. There was so much of prosperity in India, but the cause why the India's prosperity has gone is because scriptures have been misinterpreted. The Sudarshan is not there. So the prosperity is there, and because the scriptures have been misinterpreted, so people just manipulate the scriptures, they use it for their own this. And you know, even yesterday, so two things are required. The person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. I was reading this yesterday, this web seva that we do every day. This shows that I do it, Prabhuji. So I was reading this one particular quote, and this our Damodar Pandit Prabhu. He says that the thing which is missing in the most of the religions of this world, he says, is the personal touch of a sadhu when there are problems in life. It's a brilliant realization. The thing that is really missing in most of the religions of this world is the personal touch of a sadhu when there are problems. Just see. So when there is a sadhu, when there are problems in life, and the sadhu gives the proper guidance to you, and that guidance is given from the scripture, and that is the Sudarshan, then there is transformation of heart. And once there is transformation of heart, then there is no exploitation of the prosperity that takes place. So that Sudarshan is the most important. And the another thing that the wheel indicates is the cyclic nature. The wheel keeps on moving. That means when there is prosperity, there is enough food to eat. So people's mind are not busy in looking for food and looking for money and, you know, wasting time. You know, that when that engagement is not there, so people have enough time to for progressing in life, you know. Then from the same prosperity, many children are born who will take the saffron life. They'll again go back to the saffron. So unless the prosperity is there and the Sudarshan is there, this green will not again go back to saffron. That will not happen. So there has to be a complete cyclic motion, and that keeps on happening. And if this cyclic motion keeps on happening, you know, just like you have a, if you take a small bucket of water, and at the bottom, you just make a hole and create a small swirl there. So the small swirl will keep on moving slowly, 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 slowly. But then what will happen? It will attract all the water which is around it also. That will also start moving. And very soon it will be a huge whirl, right? So in India, suppose if we start this small whirl here, that is moving, is having the cyclic nature of saffron, white, green, saffron, white, green, saffron, white. It's going on, going on, going on, going on. It's going to collect so many particles from around, and it's going to become whole worldwide movement in one day. It will slowly happen, but it has to start at some point of time. You know? And then Srila Prabhupada, you know, he was that small swirl. He started that small swirl. So that small swirl started, and it started moving, and now it became a worldwide movement. Right? So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he said, Bharata Bhumi Te Hoila Manushya Janma Yar, Janma Sarthak Kori Kara Uparopka. He said that if you are born in India, first you do Janma Sarthak. That means you understand the principle of sacrifices, understand the principle of, you know, maintaining celibacy, and then having a stable grihastha ashram and the prosperity and the wonderful scriptures, right? And then do parakara upkar, and then you do upkar to the entire world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that message. And then, so therefore, a real, you know, because sometimes you can ask the question in the public that, you know, what it means to be an Indian, you see? But does an Indian mean that a person who is expert in software? Or does an Indian mean to be a person who is expert in charming snakes? Or does an Indian means who is willing to dance when some cricket star hits a sixer? What is the definition of an Indian? And he puts a tricolor on his flag and his forehead and dances like that. Does this actually define an Indian? No, it does not. Therefore, this our Uttam Maheshwari, you know, he has taken out this book. And, you know, very nice, in this, the preface of that book, he writes this line. It actually touched my heart. He says that the qualification to be an Indian is the greatest disqualification to be a Bharatiya. I like that, actually. Because a Bharatiya means the descendant of Bharat, the descendant of Bharat Maharaj. That is a Bharatiya. And what is Bharat Maharaj doing? He's performing sacrifices. He's performing sacrifices of the prosperity of the whole world. And he's a very strong, valiant Kshatriya. Right, but an Indian, he is happy in just earning money. That's all. So this is very important. So if we have to be Bharatiya, then we have to understand the spirit of sacrifice. And then the another thing which I was which came to my mind in ISKCON, you know, nowadays people often, because he's Bharat Maharaj is a very powerful Kshatriya, and you know, in ISKCON people think that, you know, there has to be a Kshatriya wing of ISKCON also. I have heard this devotees talking about. You know, I think recently some people showed some videos also how that training has been given, you know, people to have Kshatriyas. But if you just look back with this particular example, or if you look back the history of pure Kshatriyas taking birth in this land of India, you know, we see what is happening here. Just see, you know, this Dushyanta and Shakuntala. This Shakuntala was staying in the ashram of Kanva Rishi, and this Dushmanta king, he went there. And he was attracted to her. But he speaks to her. He says that, you know, you cannot be a Brahmani. You cannot be a daughter of a Brahmani. He said, the very fact that I am attracted to you, that means you have to be a Kshatriya woman. So just see the purity of this person. His purity is so powerful that, he, and the confidence that he has of his purity, that just by looking at a lady, he understood that this lady cannot be a Brahmani, because it's my natural nature. I just cannot be attacked, because what the scriptures say, that Dhenu Dhatri Tatha Purthvi, the shloka of Chanakya Pandit, Brahmani Rajapatnika. So if there's a Brahmani, if there's a Rajapatni, that should be treated as a mother. So he said, the fact that I'm attracted to you, that means you cannot be a Brahmani. This is a kind of purity. And then Shakuntala also was a very chaste wife. Right? So where there is this purity, the purity of force and the chastity, the combination of that purity and chastity automatically gives rise to birth of children who are very strong. And the second factor which we see, by which the strong Kshatriyas appear, and we see that in the life of Shivaji Maharaj also, that when Shivaji Maharaj was supposed to be born, you know, his mother, she was praying intensely. She was actually praying to Goddess Bhavani that please send some person who is a representative who will take care of the religion, because the religion is actually going haywire completely. It is getting destroyed. I need an empowered representative. So she was praying intensely. And then when Shivaji Maharaj was born, and there is this nice story, you know, he was a small child, 3 year old. And just like children have their, they do mock battles. So he was doing a mock battle. He was standing on the mountain. And all the small other children were there. And he said, hey, I am the king of this mountain. You know, any one of you can come and climb the mountain, just show me. So children were coming, and he was actually fighting with them. And then soon the sunset happened. And the mother called out. He said, Shiva, come back. It's late in the night. He said, no, I'm busy fighting. I can't come back. So just like, you know, Yashoda Mai also, she used to do the trick. So Yashoda, Krishna would not come back. You know, she would say, Aho Bilau will come. And of course, Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He wants to share the rasa with his devotee. So he would get scared. So just like the equivalent of Aho Bilau in Marathi language is Bagul Bua, they call it. So Jizamata, she said, you know, come, otherwise Bagul Bua will come. And Shivaji Maharaj said, let the Bagul Bua will come, I will cut him into pieces. And then she realized, yes, my prayers have been answered. The three-year-old person, he cannot make a statement like this. That let Bagul Bua will come, I will cut him into pieces. So then she understood the prayers have been answered. And then the combination of these two things, you know, we see in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. If you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, you know, the person who was intensely praying for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance was Advaita Acharya. And he was praying intensely. He was performing this worship of Shaligram Shila with Tulsi and Ganga, and he was intensely praying for the appearance of the Lord, right? But the amazing thing is that Lord did not appear to him. He appeared to some other person. But Advaita Acharya did not have any problem with that. In fact, three of his children were non-devotees also, and three were devotees. So he didn't have any problem with that. He was intensely praying. The prayers were completely selfless. And on some other place, there was a pure medium, a pure person and a chaste woman. That medium was there. And the prayers were here, and the medium was here, right? And then the Lord appeared through that medium. The Lord can come through any medium. He can come through pillar also. But when he has to take a birth like that, he chooses a pure medium, which was completely different than the person who was praying. So devotees have to learn this art of being selflessness, because sometimes, you know, I have seen, I am a grihastha. Some of you brahmacharis may not be able to appreciate this fact. But you know, sometimes a child is born to you, and child is born to other fellow devotee also. And the child of a fellow devotee shows better spiritual and devotional characteristics. And you don't feel happy about it. You feel kind of, you know, little disturbed. Why my child is not so great? So that is not a selflessness. So if you want Krishna to come, take birth through you only, then that may not happen. But that happened in case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed and a pure son was born. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, you know, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not a grihastha. But his prayers were there. The dedication was there. So somewhere else Prabhupada was born, right? But there is complete selflessness, right? It was not that he was praying that, okay, let a son be born to my disciple only or something like that. No, anywhere it's born, that's fine. As long as the prayers are answered. So for true empowered representatives coming from Krishna to take birth, these two combinations are required. You need a pure medium and you need selfless prayers. When the selfless prayers and the pure medium is there, then the empowered incarnations will come. And then they can create revolutions. So that is very important. So so I was thinking that this verse, I just had this much to share. Hare Krishna. I didn't have much time to prepare. Srila Prabhupada ki chai. If anybody has any questions, then you can ask. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai.